never, ever outgrow the need for you to do that. My dad still, he's 86, he lives in Arizona, still calls me. And those calls often pick me up off the mat and often give me fresh hope and courage just because my dad believes in me and he says so. I have no interest in discussing politics, but I saw something politically that was so interesting along these lines. President Bush, just before he left office, finished his term, had an interview with him and his dad. Any of you see that? He and Bush 41 and 43 sat down with Britt Hume, who was a friendly reporter to them. And Britt Hume asked the question of George the Younger. He goes, well, you've had a pretty rough time of it. You've had all this criticism and your approval ratings have been down in the low digits and you have been, you know, pretty taken to task by the media. How have you survived in all this? Like, how did you get through such a rough time? And I think, friend or foe of George Bush, you have to admit he had a rough go of it the last 4 years in his treatment, being treated. I was so surprised at his answer, that he was that honest. He said, you know how I've gotten through this? Pointing to his dad, Bush 41. And he said, it's him. He said, that's how I got through what I've been through. He said, I'm quoting him, it's the unconditional love I received from my father that has strengthened me in the last 4 years. Well, his dad, the World War II generation, a little uncomfortable with kind of some of that mushy talk and whatever. Bush 41 kind of looks down and Britt goes, is that true? He goes, well, yeah, I called him and I'm proud of my boy. He passed the test. He made it through. And the younger one said again, well, it's no secret. He'd call up and say, I love you. It was that unconditional love. He said, that's what got me through when things were really tough. Now there's the President of the United States, 60 years old, saying the way I was able to handle the pressures of my office is my dad, who is 90, or close to it, would call and say, son, I love you. Well, guys, if the President of the United States needs his dad, your sons, your daughters, they need you too. Even if they're grown up, even if they live who knows where. You are not too old. The day is not gone. It is not over. If you'll notice, it was at the end of men's lives in the Old Testament, like Isaac, when they gave the blessing. It was as they were elders, sometimes on death's door, is when they would still continue to confer on their grown children the blessing. So please, don't ever underestimate just how powerful that is. Okay, we got to keep moving. Let's talk about the differences, men's top emotional needs. Now, here's a real shocker. This is one that's probably very controversial. Maybe I'm the only one that believes this, but I think that a husband's top emotional need is sexual fulfillment in the marriage. And that is not a mistake, that is not wrong, that's not the result of the fall, that is by the design of God. I believe that's exactly the way he made men, and he did it for a purpose. Several purposes. Now, let me just ask a question. Let's assume you have a 20-year-old man who's got a good job, or he's just graduated from school, or he's just gotten out of the military, and he's making some okay money, and he's got his buddies, he's got an apartment, he's got a car, he's able to go and, you know, hunt, fish, sail, whatever he likes to do. He's got all the freedom in the world. He can eat whatever he wants. He can keep his own hours. He can do whatever. What in the world would possibly be powerful enough to make him give all that up in order to work 8 to 5, mow grass, and walk sick children? What in the world would be possibly strong enough to make a young man give up his independence, his freedom, his all, everything? Any guesses? I may have to tell you then. It is sexual fulfillment. And I need to speak to women at this point because I think there's so much misunderstanding in a marriage sometimes with this. Sexual fulfillment is the way your husband feels loved. That's different for you, perhaps. I'm not saying that female sexuality is in any way so different or whatever. It's just that men uniquely... Did you notice what Jacob said to Laban when he wanted to get married? He said, "My time is completed and I want to lie with her." Man, I wouldn't have said that to my father-in-law prior to the wedding. I'll tell you that. That took some real courage. But I'll have to give him high marks for his honesty. You know, it's women plan the wedding, men plan the honeymoon. It's why men say, "You want it? You want this dish colors? Go ahead, that's fine. Anything you want, you know, do the wedding, whatever you want." Sexual fulfillment. I think it was Gary Oliver who said this on Moody Radio one day when I was listening. He said that women have a bonding hormone, oxytocin. And those of you who are in the medical practice know that that's very strong in the female system. Men have a low amount of oxytocin. Oxytocin is the bonding hormone, among other things. It gives women the instinct where they like to bond and connect with other people. Guys, you've seen this. You picked up your kids at school or whatever, or grandkids, and all the mothers are there waiting too. I guarantee you they're all connected. They're all in little groups. They're talking, you know, "Well, how much is amoxicillin in Wisconsin?" You know, and I mean, they've just got conversations going. We men, we just kind of stand there and we go, We point to another man, we go, Okay, that's it. We've said all we need to say. And we're done. The only time men have the same level of oxytocin in their brain or system that women do is during the act of physical intimacy. It's the only time that men on that emotional level have that same sense of closeness and bonding that you women enjoy every day in your normal interactions. And so for men, the sexual experience is not just a physical one, it's a very powerful emotional experience and time of closeness as well. And so I think we have to accept each other as we are rather than try and remake one another. So I like to do this with women just to have some fun for just a moment, if I may. To kind of change roles, to give you a glimpse into your husband's thinking. Imagine if your husband came to you and wanted to talk to you about the problem in your marriage. And he comes to you, "Dear, listen, boy, this is tough. Because I don't want to be misunderstood, and I know this is really delicate, and this could really create some hurt. I don't want to do that, but I want to be honest, and I think we need to talk. So I'm going to bring up a subject that's I know, kind of touchy. It's conversation. Dear, you're always pressuring me for conversation. I mean, when I get up in the morning before we go out, you go, 'What if we had a little conversation?' And I go, 'Well, I'm in a hurry. I've got to go to work.' Or I come home at noon and you go, 'You know, over lunch we could have conversation.' Well, see, I'm feeling pressured all the time. And, you know, I have a lot of pressures at work and sometimes I have a headache. And then just before I go to sleep, you ask me if we can have conversation. And see, I've talked to some of the other men and their wives only ask for conversation twice a month. Is this getting uncomfortable yet for anybody? You know, and so I'm wondering, sweetheart, if maybe because you have such a need for conversation, if you don't need to go to counseling. Or, you know, there's medications that can help, too. I am a person, you know, I'm not just somebody you can talk to. You know, I have other needs as well. Okay, if your husband said that to you, how would you feel? Would you feel accepted or would you feel rejected? Would you feel like a really important part of your life is understood, or would you feel like maybe it's being resented? And when it comes to sexual fulfillment, if you can just understand that your husband needs that in the same way you need conversation or one of these other needs, now you're getting to the place where we can love, you can love unselfishly. A couple of other things. Men need a recreational companion. Men need companionship. They did a survey of 400 men who were divorced and getting remarried. They said, what's the number one thing you admire about your next wife? The answer was, she's my best friend. Now, why might that surprise you? You'd think it might have been something about sex or whatever. It wasn't. It was, she's my best friend. We men are instinctively have a need for buddies. We grow up with buddies. In school, we hang around with buddies. In high school, we have our buddies. In college or the military, you know, this is my buddy from the Navy. This was my buddy from the Marines. You know, men, by nature, love to have a companion that they can have fun and can recreate and can relax with. And that companionship, that friendship, never goes away. But when we get married, we have to get rid of a lot of our friends sometimes. We got to scale way back on our time hanging out with the guys because we've got other things we got to do now, and we know that. And we're willing to make that choice. Now, let me risk breaking some codes of secrecy among the male fraternity, but I do this out of love for both men and women, that they would understand each other. Men lead, for the most part, very lonely lives in our culture. Men are taught to compete. Men are taught to be singularly self-reliant. And there's some virtues in all of that, but the end result often is what one book called the friendless American male. They did a study of men recently. I saw it and read it. I do not recall the exact source, but it said this, that most men they had surveyed said they did not have one close friend. Now, many of you women could not imagine going through life without a close friend or several close friends. That's your lifeline. That's what keeps you breathing. That's who you call when you're upset or that's who you whatever. And your close friends, heavens, how do you live without it? Do you realize that most women, when they 75%, 80% of women who lose their husbands become widows, never remarry? And 80% of men who lose their wives do remarry. Now, why is that? Well, there's a number of reasons, but one reason women don't remarry is they have a network of relationships. They've got friends, they've got children, they've got grandchildren, they've got their church, they've got their neighbors, they've got years and years of social network, and as much as they grieve and miss their husband, socially speaking, they still continue to breathe. And I've seen it as a pastor over and over and over again, where women, yes, they're very lonely for their husbands, but they fill their lives with relationships they've built over a lifetime. Whereas men, when they lose their wives, they're lost. It's like in many cases, I'm generalizing, but this is generally what I see. They're just lost. And it's like they go through the motions, but there's such a lack and a void and something missing. My dad was 79, yeah, when my mother died. And it was hard on us all, and at first he said he wasn't going to remarry, but he ended up finally remarrying one of my former church secretaries. Boy, now there's a twist on things, isn't there? He married my church secretary. She was a widow, too, at the time. They had been friends as couples for years. I'll tell you what I enjoyed about the wedding. It was the first time in my life, because I did the ceremony, where I got to stand in front of my dad and point at him and say, "Now repeat after me." That was the very first time that ever happened, I guarantee you. Never before. And I think dad's lived longer because he did remarry. I think that his life is, he's still going good at 86. I do a television show down in the Chicago area that people can call in and ask about marriage questions. And one night we were on this very topic. A woman called in and said, "You know what, Bob? You know what? This thing about companionship and men needing a friend? It's true." She said, "The other day, my..."